Today is Sunday, March 10th, 2024, and I apologize to all my students who would be listening on Zoom. YU has a problem that's beyond us here in Gris. Our whole system is down. I can't print anything.
I think there's a separate problem with the Zoom in New York.
A separate problem with the Zoom and a separate problem with the printing, and we got to go back to teaching in caves and be cavemen. And I apologize, but I'm just frustrated and nothing I can do. Let us begin properly. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim betzara b'shivya umdim bein b'yam bein b'yabasha bein b'avir. Hamakom yirachem aleim v'yotziyein mitzara levacha me'afel orem mishibad legula hashto ba'gala v'zman karim v'noma amein. Just some comments. The letter that Kenny, you brought in from Rabbi Heschel Schechter, it turns out that letter was, that's a talk he gave 10 years ago. So all my guesses of who it was he was speaking to, everything is unimportant now. And the issue he raises, the same issue that was raised in Volozhin in the Monday class with Rabbi Yoshua Heschel, a Rav has to be part of the contemporary world. And the question is how, when, where, but we'll leave that for another time. Hilchata. The Mashiachah. There's no black and white answer you can give. So Rabbi Yeshua Grunstein, who checked it out, I thank him, that he was able to establish it was not contemporary. Regarding the draft, the Haredim, endless material this weekend in the Alonim, in the newspapers. And I stand on what I've said all along, that it's a two-way street. I'm even enforced in what I think, because Shabbat, two of my grandsons, we were four generations, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and two of my grandsons who have been very active in the army, and they're, you know, totally at home with the Tzionidati world, and they have no problem on being on a base where there may be women. It's no different than Bnei Akiva or Ezra. But they all said to me, which I've said all along, that the army has to be willing to accept the Haredim. And you can't expect Haredim who are not acclimated to a coeducational climate, they come into the army and they're in their same unit, they're going to be women. And this is the challenge. The woke generation would rather have no Haredim and only have men and women in tanks together with all that that implies. All right, so I don't have to say anything further. I hope the process will work out. Everything in life goes slowly. Kima, kima. I have a lot to talk about, but it's not for now. And I stand on what I've said, and I just, my grandchildren just enforced my thinking. And if you look at the Alonim, many of the Alonim say the same thing. Rabbi Levenstein has a big article, and others have articles. And it doesn't mean I'm happy that a Gerer Chassid walks into a room and sees women and starts shaking. It's not my cup of tea. But I have to respect the Gerer lifestyle. Okay. Now, let's come back here, and we have a very fascinating tshuva. The second half of it is one of a kind. But this question, we're dealing with the Mishnah Halacha, Simin Shinchet, in Chelik Yud, and it's a mother who is diabetic, and tests have to be done on Shabbat. And the question comes up, how can you do tests? Minimize the Chilul Shabbos, and on the other hand, how can a child test the mother if the child is making a chabur in the mother? And it's an isa d'oraita, not to hit your parents, not to draw blood, a very serious isa. Now, the question of the diabetic, We saw last week it's an open Gemara, and I would say there's total unanimity. We saw the Minchat Yitzchak. We saw Reb Moshe David Tendler quoting his father-in-law, Reb Moshe Feinstein. It's very interesting that we Ashkenazim have a minhag not to name children with the same name as an in-law. It goes back to the Sefer Hasidim. And we have a minhag Yisrael that if your name is Moshe and your father and your girlfriend's name is father's name is Moshe, you add a name to your name, so it shouldn't be exactly the same. What's interesting is that Reb Moshe Feinstein's two sons-in-law were both named Moshe. Moshe David Tendler and Eliyahu Moshe Shiskal, Rebellion Moshe Shiskal. So, b'dieved, it should not matter. I had one son, I know one Talmud of mine married a daughter of a big Talmud Chacham, and his name was exactly the same as his father-in-law. I don't know what they did, if they added a third name or just let it stand, because Seif Chassidim, it doesn't mean that it's halacha l'maisa. But there's no question that if you're a doctor and you're a dentist and your mother insists that you do the medical procedure or the dental procedure, there's no question that this is kibud av v'em, and as the Gemara says, v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. And v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, Rashi explains, is measured. You don't want anyone to do something to you, to hit you, but if someone wounds you for the sake of curing you, you wouldn't object. And this is why me'ika hadin it's mutter, and we ended off the class, I showed you the Aruch HaShulchan, that if the father insists, and he says his son can do it. There are other factors as well. I showed you with the Minchat Yitzchak. You have to go to a dentist, you have to go to a doctor, you have to wait online, you have to waste time, you have to spend money, you have to travel. So the father has a right to say, let my son do it. All that adds to the son and adds to the kibud av v'em. Now, that's only part of the tshuva. But then you come to the question of Shabbat. And here, according to what Rav Menashe Klein is telling us, and this is medical science, not yesterday, it's 1985. So you're dealing with medical science onto 40 years ago. It could be today, the system is different. But then they had to check and they had to draw blood. There was no other way to do it. And with a pregnant woman, the urine is not enough to do these tests. And here the question is, Chilul Shabbos, are you allowed to do the Chabura on Shabbat? So first of all, I want to show you a Rambam that comes up. When we talk about Shabbat, everything on Shabbat is, you have to have a certain shear. If there's no certain shear, if it's not big enough, it's not the Issa D'Oraita, that may only be an Issa D'Rabbanan, or it's not an Issa Yechayavan, or it may fall under the category Ptur, V'yeinu Chayav. And what's the prohibition of drawing blood? So here I want to quote to you from a wonderful little sefer that was written by Torah Tshvaka. And this very building, you all know that, I don't know how much you know about the building, but Kenny knows. This building, a guy named Ratefet got this building with miracles, mamish miracles, for Torah. And originally the building was for BMT, Beis Medrash LaTorah, which we'll talk about on April 8th. There'll be a special shiur. Over the years, BMT went off the scene. Reasons are not important now, but that was the reality. And Gris took over the building. Gris is only big enough to fill one classroom at most. So the building is rented out to Torah Tracker. Torah Tracker's been here for at least 20 years, maybe longer. Am I right, Jomo? It's at least...
From 2001.
It's 23 years already. Now, in 2018, a Talmud here named Jonathan Joshua Pizer, it's from a family that I taught in BMT and in the Kollel, he's already three generations of that family, but he's already a second generation of students that I know. He did a book, 39 Melachot of Shabbat, that Torah Tracker published. And he talks about a malacha called dash, threshing, extraction of fruit, vegetables, earth-grown commodity from its natural shelf. And what this refers to is taking basically a liquid out of something solid. This is what we call threshing. And he gives a long list, I'm quoting from his book, what would fit in to threshing, to removing something, squeezing olives and grapes, squeezing fruits for their juice, squeezing water out of a cloth or garment, using a sponge, etc. Now, this may very well be the problem when drawing blood. Forget about the chabura. The chabura is a din with kibud avayim. But here we're talking about Issa Shabbos. So I'm quoting to you from Hilchot Shabbat, Perik Chet, Halacha Zion. Chet Zion Hilchot Shabbat. Hadash Kigrogarat Chayav. That in order to be over the Issa, the Oraita of Dash, you have to draw something out the size of a dried fruit. It could very well be that if you take blood in Shabbos, you don't take a dried fig. I should say not a dried fruit, but a dried fig. A dried fig, I would say, is about that big. What I'm showing you, I can't even show it on Zoom, but what I'm showing you with my finger, I would say it's about that big. You don't draw that much blood. I just had a blood test on Thursday, and my wife and I, this young lady took our blood. We didn't feel anything. My wife generally has a bigger problem than I do. It's hard to find her veins. I couldn't believe it. She was so skilled. They had to be a Beis Yaakov graduate who was trained in blood, in being a nurse. And certainly there was nothing the size of a dried date. So you see, this concept of not having a shayura makes it easier to permit someone to draw blood. Now, there's more to this, and I'm touching upon a topic that a lot has been written on, but I just want to touch it superficially for today's shiur. It's not germane. Chilul Shabbos, to save someone's life on Shabbat, who does it? One time in my building, remember I'm living in 18 Berlin 54 years now, and I'm responsible for the Shabbat elevator, I think it's 52 years already. Originally an Israeli who was quite a bit older than I was in 69, he was responsible. 2 years later he moved out and I took over. I turned it on and turned off the Shabbat elevator ever since. Now, we had a case where one of our people who owned apartments, I don't want to use the word tenants because they're not tenants, I would use the word settlers, I don't know what the right word is. One of the, down in Florida they have condos, someone owns a condominium, what would you call them, one of the owners of an apartment. So, one of our very prominent residents, president of Bank Israel, Mandelbaum was the last name, Zichrono Levracha, he took a lunch Shabbat. And Morgan David came, and they were worried he had some sort of heart seizure. And the Shabbat elevator takes time. And there was a crowd standing around downstairs. Everyone was coming home from shul. It was about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. And he asked that the elevator be turned off so they could move him out of the house as quickly as possible. Who do you think turned the elevator off? I did. Why did I turn it off? The Rambam says that the biggest Talmud Chacham present has to turn off to show everyone that Chilul Shabbat is Deicha Shabbat, that Pikuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbat. It's an open Rambam. And it's also common sense. Once you're allowed to do the Mediv, it's not Chilul Shabbat anymore. It's just saving someone's life. This is serious. So you see here, the problem is, are we sure we're saving someone's life? Is it only a suffix? Remember, you're not doing any medical procedure. You're doing medical tests. Medical tests do not fall under the same category as saving someone's life for sure. A medical test, all right, you take a blood test. Shabbat, they take people, emergency room. They do many tests. There are all types of questions. Shari Tzedek has all types of systems later on. I don't know what they use today. I know over the years they used, when we were working for the Mossad in Russia, so we used to use, like kids have, you write something and you lift up the sheet and what you write disappears. Is there a word for it? A disappearing tablet, whatever, that's what we used in Russia. You wrote something on it, you lifted it up, and that was it. Couldn't be traced afterwards. Shari Tzedek has all types of innovations. I remember there was a time they recorded. When the doctor finished, he recorded everything. Then there could even be today they have non-Jewish workers who record what the doctor says on Shabbat. So you see, if you're not positive, it's absolute pikuach nefesh, you do what you can to minimize the Chilul Shabbat. And that's the question here. Someone asked me, why is there a question? Rav Menashe Klein, why is he hemming and whoring and trying to figure out and come up with a solution? Chilul Shabbat doesn't exist. It's pikuach nefesh. Calling the biggest Rav present in the hospital in Shari Tzedek and have him do what has to be done on Shabbat. But you see, here it's a question, must it be done? Can you avoid doing it? Is it really pikuach nefesh? Do you really need all these blood tests? All right. Halacha l'maisa, I don't have to tell you. We act very quickly on Shabbos. We don't dilly-dally. But nevertheless, with subsidiary concepts, we try to minimize if we can. So that's also part of the tshuva. You'll see in a minute his suggestions. Then there's a whole question about a katan. And I want to make this clear because Josh Yehoshua Grinstein asked me. You see, the Torah says openly that your son and daughter have to rest on Shabbat. It also says, Kercha b'shevisharecha b'hemtecha. What does it mean exactly? It means they cannot do any melacha for you. That is correct. Everyone has to rest on Shabbat. However, it doesn't mean that you have to force the guy, the Kercha b'shevisharecha b'hemtecha, to stop working. An animal. The Gemara says openly that if an animal wants to eat food in Shabbat and do what for us would be shrum d'oraita, imagine more, you go and you pick apples on Shabbat, you pick tomatoes, you pick the fruit. No, that's an isha d'oraita. But an animal, he can't do it for you, but he can do whatever he wants. Could be the very same thing with all these concepts. A child who is not yet 12, 13, girl, boy, they do what they want. You don't question, do you have to stop them? And with Nevelot, Treifot, the children, eating, baiting, a lot has been written on this. There is an overwhelming concept that it's not just what they do and do for you, but there's also chinuch. See, it's not just a child is forbidden to do malacha on Shabbat if you're going to benefit from it. It's a lot more to Shabbat. Chinuch. That you have to start educating a child. And the chinuch begins already at the age of 1.5, 2. I told you that the greatest joy I have, my great-grandchildren asked me if this is muktzah, if that's muktzah. They're little kids. But already at the age of 2, they have a feeling Shabbat is different. So see, this, I cannot say this might not fall under the category of they're doing malacha, because they're not doing any malacha for me. But this is the concept of chinuch. And this is what we spoke about when we were growing up. I saw this in the Bronx. A lot of kids carried their grandparents' talit to shul on Shabbat. Kenny, you saw it too? We saw it. Are they allowed to do that? See, they're already, they're doing malacha for you. Me'ika hadin. So Yoshua Grinstein sent me sources that, well, it was Carmelit, it was Nereshit HaRab and the Oraita. I don't know, with the Bronx, a few million people live there, see, over more than 600,000 Jews. I'm not certain, again, I don't want to go into my shiurim on a Reuven, but I'm not certain it wasn't Reshit HaRab and the Oraita. I know, the Chazon Ish, we can come out with interesting Heterim. Chazon Ish is very powerful because he held the more houses you have, like in the Bronx, that itself is already a mechitza. It's mamish a wall, It's mamish better than any Erev you put up. It's a real wall, not just a fictional wall or a halachic wall. But we saw this a lot. And here too, Reb Menashe Klein brings in the concept that a girl under 12, if she does the taking the blood, so that might be better. And this is an open question, but she's taking the blood for you. On the other hand, when a girl of 11, 10 does something, it's not a mulach. In other words, a katan or a ktana cannot create a malacha. So maybe that's better. And this Rabbi Nasser Klein, very fascinating what he gets into here with this young child, that first of all, it's not a malacha, she's not of age. Secondly, she's not taking that much blood that it would be the size of a dried fig. And it could be for all these reasons, let the little girl take it. It's v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. It's not a prohibition of kibbut aviyim, of hitting makah avivimo. And it could be, this might be a better solution. Ah, you say, why a little girl? It should be an adult. Should be a big Talmud Chacham. But we're not certain. This is a test. We're not certain why she has to... That we're not certain that this is pikuach nefesh. It's only a test. Maybe we can get along without the test. All right. Then he goes in, why don't we bring a non-Jewish nurse to the area? Why don't you arrange? Why do we have to get involved with a Jew? Why do we have to get involved with a child? And bring a nurse. So it's fascinating. His mind here is prolific. Tell me, you go to the Baba, whole sugya, makif and nikaf. You go to the Baba and you tell the Baba to shave you with a razor. Hey, wait a minute, it's a guy shaving you with a razor, but in order for him to shave you, you move your head. The minute you move your head, you're part of the Isa. So he says, well, maybe having a nurse, if the man were on.
Yes.
The Zoom's on. Someone sent me a message.
What happened?
The Zoom's on.
Yeah. It's working now.
It's working. It's a miracle. This is... America has let us down. I apologize to everyone, but the whole system here... Excuse me?
What have we missed?
You'll pick it up in YU Torah. It's already a half hour into the shiur, so I can't... We're dealing with the girl taking care of her mother's blood, the blood test, the diabetic, the mother is pregnant. It's a real situation here. And Rav Menashe Klein is suggesting a Gentile nurse can come in. But he raises the issue, if the woman cooperates, if the woman moves her hand, then it's like a person taking a razor that a guy is shaving him, it's makif and nikaf. All right, he says, but it is possible the woman can sit still, doesn't move, and it would be better maybe have a Gentile nurse, a Gentile doctor, and then he raises the issue, do we really need all these blood tests? And here he says, maybe the person could take it before Shabbat and take it after Shabbat. And he has to have medical advice, but if it's an absolute necessity, then she has to do it on Shabbat. All right, I don't have to tell you, the question of before and after is something, even with Yom Kippur, we get involved with the same question when someone has to take medicine. Is it possible to take it right before Yom Kippur, take it right after Yom Kippur? And you need medical advice. Halacha l'maisa, if there is the slightest thought of pikuach nefesh, and this is what they asked Rav Velvel, the Brisk Rav, v'as heis pikuach nefesh, what is the measurement? How would you define pikuach nefesh? And it is reported that the Rebbe said even one in a million, if there's a chance, then you have to do everything possible on Shabbat. And the question of Chilul Shabbat is not a factor, it's pikuach nefesh. So when all is said and done, Rav Menashe Klein says if you have to do it on Shabbos, you should do it on Shabbat, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should send a refuah shlema. Now, he says something very fascinating here at the end, which I have to tell you has become modern day practice in at least two communities I know of. And I'm speaking seriously, don't start laughing. He says at the end that the community has an obligation to have she yavol rofeha akum ukiyotze ba, you have to have a gentle doctor, a gentle nurse available for these questionable pikuach nefesh situations on Shabbat. I can pause for a moment and tell you this is the story of Rav Shach. Some of you know that Rav Shach had one son and one daughter. Neither are alive today. The son, whatever the reasons were, the chances of life, we became quite good friends. When I was in graduate school, Effie was my classmate in many classes. He got his doctorate 67. I got my doctorate 1 year earlier, 66. And then when he came back, he was in Flatbush Yeshiva, assistant principal. When he came back to Israel, we became very close again because he davened with my children, the shul that my children run on Rehov Palmach. Fine. His father was not overly satisfied the way his son turned out. You all know that the father was not just Agudat Yisrael, but then split Agudat Yisrael and Degel HaTaira, and there's a Mesorah in the Litvish world that is correct, and no one else equals it. I'm being very mild in my language, trying to portray him as honestly as I can without my own subjective feelings. So Evi Shach, his father, Rav Shach, Panovich Rosh Yeshiva, always attributed his failure with his son to the fact that he didn't stay home on Shabbat. Now, what are we talking about, Mati? You know the story. His wife was in medical school. She was Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's niece in Russia, Moscow, I believe. She was a brilliant lady. Rabbi Zalman pulled her out of medical school to marry his Rav Shach. It's a good shidduch, big Talmud Chacham, Yirei Shemayim. She was more than a nurse. In Mea Sharim Geula area, there was a non-Jewish doctor, Ohev Yisrael, who loved Jews, and he was the Shabbos doctor, always available on Shabbos. Rav Shach's wife assisted him, and she never wanted to leave her home. She felt the responsibility to be available on Shabbat if the doctor needed her. Rav Shach would go to the yeshiva. So he always said he wasn't home to sing Zmirit with his son on Shabbat. And he attributed the fact that Effie became a religious Zionist, a YU graduate, a PhD from Bernard Revel Graduate School. All right. But you see, this concept of having a non-Jewish doctor on Shabbat, fascinating concept. Tell me, have you ever been to Kew Gardens Hills lately? I saw this with my own eyes. I last time I traveled was right before Corona. Corona changed our lives, and now it's years already after Corona, but my koach is the koach of an old man. So we're limited, travel, all right, have to live with reality. But on Main Street in Kew Gardens Hills, there was a store with a big sign, Shabbos Guy Available, owned by non-Jews. They might have been Puerto Ricans. I don't think they were Afro-American, they were Puerto Ricans, Caribbeans. And they knew about Judaism. Maybe they worked in Jewish homes, and they had a whole business, a big sign, Anyone who needs us on Shabbat, we're available from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And anyone who had an emergency, they were there. Well, I just read in the weekend alone in this week that B'nai Brak, I couldn't believe my ears, B'nai Brak has a center where Goyim are available on Shabbat. And all types of rules, how you call them, how you speak to them, chas v'chalila, not to tell them the electricity went off, you have to say it's dark in the house. And it gives you, I saw this word by word, telling you how to relate to them, how to speak to them. And after Shabbat, you're to give them 25 shekels for each act they do in Shabbat. So that if they have to turn on your electricity and play with your frigidaire on Shabbat, it's 25 shekel times two. And this is what Rabbi Nasha Klein says. The community is obligated to see to it that there's a non-Jewish doctor, a non-Jewish nurse available on Shabbat. Wow, I don't know what he's talking about. In Israel, I can understand that. You have a city like B'nai Brak, where you have a Haredi city council, all the members were 90% Haredim. All right, they hire a non-Jew. Just like you have a non-Jew who buys the chametz on Pesach, you have a non-Jew who will take care of Shabbat. But I don't know in Borough Park, what does it mean? The community's responsible? Is there a community? Do the Jews, are they organized? But this is what Rabbi Nasha Klein says. So in this tshuva, halacha lemaisa, he says, if we have no choice, the little girl can do the malacha, can take the blood, no problem of Kibbut Aviyim, no problem of Shabbat, not enough blood the size of a fig, and I can testify, my blood test with so many different results that came out of it, it's just a few drops of blood, nothing more. And fabulous the way he speaks about the guy, very interesting. That we should have goyim available, and this takes us back to the whole question in Eretz Yisrael: do we have goyim? Are we a self-sufficient society? Those of you that grew up 120, 130 years ago, there was a whole movement here that we have to be a Jewish state with no goyim whatsoever. We have to be self-sufficient. Where did this whole machlekes come out? Milking cows on Shabbat. Milking cow. Today it's not a shaita. Today everything is automatic. It's a different world today. But this is before the automatic equipment. Milking cows on Shabbat. Who should do it? And many from Jews, goyim. Another from Jews said, no, we can't create a world where dependent upon goyim. And we have to find a world where we can milk Shabbat of pi halacha. And I need not tell you how much was written. How do you milk? Milk into the cheese, milk onto the floor, milk into waste, milk collected. Then the automatic machines. Today, endless milk in Israel is lemahadrin. No Malacha is involved in milking the cows on Shabbat. But this is this whole question that Rav Menashe Klein touches upon. Now, what's fascinating is he has Shimon Shin Tet. This was Shimon Shin Chaf. Shimon Shin Tet. 1985, to the same person, he doesn't give us the name, obviously involved with, I believe Cleveland may be Rabbi David. Oh, he does. It's Rabbi, excuse me, Rabbi Shalom Dovber Chaikin. No, he does give the name here. Rav Degil Chabad Cleveland. Maybe someone listening in Cleveland, my dear student David Newman, maybe he remembers the details because he's been in Cleveland all his life. He's second generation. Father was parents, Chassidish Yidden, who survived the Holocaust, and they raised wonderful children. He has a son living here, a grandson, in other words, who's a doctor in Beit Shemesh, lives in Beit Shemesh. I wonder if some of you don't know him. Now, the second part of the tshuva is both fascinating and human beings, it's not the Torah world we envision. And this takes us back again to Kew Gardens Hills and Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. And I've told you the story many times. It's a very inspiring story. Queens, when I was growing up, very frum Jews lived in Queens. Frum Jews lived Manhattan, Brooklyn, less in the Bronx, and less in Queens. Nothing in Staten Island. The first real frum Jew to do things in Staten Island was someone I knew very well, Ruby Gross, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Gross family. Reb Moshe and his family, Ruby brought them there. But Queens, all you had was Jamaica, that area. There were Jews, that was business, that was the center, there were the schools. So you had a big Orthodox shul. I remember the rabbi taught his children. And then a Chassidic Rebbe opened. And the shul was furious. They took the rabbi to Beis Din. Hasagat Gvul. Hasagat Gvul is unfortunately a real problem. People are real. People need money. People struggle. That rabbi moved to Main Street in Kew Gardens Hills. And Fabian Schoenfeld, Young Israel of Kew Gardens Hills, that was just getting started, helped the rabbi make a minyan, sent from his own congregation. And this leads to the whole question. Shuls, rabbis, encroaching, open up a doctorate that a guy named Rothkopf did for Bernard Revel Graduate School. Bernard Revel, builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy. Rothkopf produces letters from European Rabbanim, Europäische Rabbanim, writing to Rabbi Revel, why you graduates have come in? They're destroying me. They take away my panasa. They sell chametz, meaning people sell them their chametz, give them their chametz to sell to the non-Jews, and give them a gift, money for it. And these young rabbis, they're cutting into my panasa. And this is a question that comes up time and again. Money, kasagatvu, support, rabbis, where do you draw the line? More than that, you ask a question, the rabbi gives an answer. You're not happy with the answer. Can you ask another rabbi? It's all question relationship between Rabbanim. And this is the question Rabbi Chaikin throws at Rav Menashe Klein. And the story he tells here, pretty sad. But again, I have to tell you, these are human beings. And he asked Rav Menashe Klein, can a Rav forbid his congregants not to ask questions of another rabbi? Can a Rav forbid his congregants to go occasionally to the other shul, to support the other shul, to support the rabbi? Do the congregants have to say, does the Rav have to say, one rabbi you're supporting, don't go to Lahagzik Rav Acher. It's going to hurt the support of the original shul, of the original rabbi. Can you imagine this question? Does a rabbi have the right to tell you, this is where you belong, don't start shopping around with someone else? And I can tell you, right, perhaps in the more affluent neighborhoods, we have money, we can afford to be generous. But growing up in the Bronx, these were poor people. Every cent counted. You had shuls that were fighting literally for existence. Can one rabbi interfere? Can you tell people, Ad kan, don't go further, don't support, don't give money? Or no? Ki natzel from Tar ben Chachma. Who can tell you who to study with? Can he? Study is a very individualistic concept. A rabbi, everyone, we saw that in the Sunday, in the Monday class last week. You look around, someone likes a rabbi, he's Sinai, Baki. Someone likes a rabbi, Okeh Harim. Someone, one rabbi, all right, he's more Mekil, Cholav, Stam Cholav, let's use the word, because Cholav Akam is, they use Cholav Akam, Cholav is not really correct, it's not used for idol worship, it's Stam Cholav. Another rabbi will be Mekil. All my life, when I learned in Lakewood, I don't even remember, but I think they were using still regular milk, Breakstone's cheese, I mean, that's an absolute fact. Others, Hasidish Jew. Cholav Vakum, Cholav Stam Cholav. Go to Rosh Harad. You can't get products with Stam Cholav. They don't allow it into the store. All right, Machlokes HaPaiskim. Cup of tea, personal. Can you force, issue decrees? Can you change a psak? A rabbi says something. Can you come along and say, well, we have a different rabbi? And then this question comes up very frequently. Let me give you another example from my own life. I started teaching in Israel 69, but that was BMT. I had a full-time job at the encyclopedia, yet I couldn't take any more teaching. 71, the encyclopedia was finished, and I faced a big decision. The publishers kept the publishing, offered me a wonderful salary, 2,000 lira a month to be a staff editor, but I had to go back to teaching full-time. Okay. One of the places I started, I wound up teaching two full jobs all my young life, I'll say. One was Jewish Agency, which included BMT and Gold, and one was Michala, which included the Israeli Division and the Foreign Students Division, Machal, Machleket Chutz Laretz. So in Machal, the girls had their own dormitory, did their own cooking. It's not like BMT that we had a caterer here. No one did their own cooking. Machal, you did your own cooking. Rebbetzin Koopman, Sipporis, Chuanu Levracha used to boast, our students, these girls will be balabustas. That was her word, balabustas. Okay. No, you have six girls in an apartment. Inevitably, you had problems, particularly with frying pans. Whenever I got a shayla on a frying pan, I sent them to Rabbi Averman. Why did I send them to Rabbi Averman? Because I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I came from YU. I came from that world. And the Rav felt that frying pans really don't have liquid, and therefore, in order to kasher it, you have to do a Lieben. A Lieben. You have to heat it out and do a real, with a blowtorch. First of all, blowtorches are not readily available. Secondly, I can tell you from my own experience in the IDF 1 year, Aaron and Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and yours truly were together in a small base in Yehuda, in Midbar Yehuda, and some Svadik fellas came over to us, could we kasher the frying pan because they make something special on Pesach with the matzah and eggs. And we took a blowtorch to kasher the frying pan. I remember I was holding it and Aaron was using the blowtorch and I was moving it around. Within 30 seconds, the whole frying pan fell apart, the whole handle. All right, the army buys a new one, all their new material, you have to list this. But I saw right away, if I would tell the girls to do a Lieben, it's not going to survive, and who's going to get a blowtorch? So I send them to Rabbi Edman. Why send them to Rabbi Edman? Because Ruby came from Chicago, and Ralph Regensburg was makil that since there is some sort of liquid in a frying pan, you can do a Hagalah. You don't have to do a Lieben. And that would save the pots, the pans for the girls, the frying pans. Hefzet Merubah, in my opinion, it was not a wealthy man. Today I'm a wealthy man, I can afford food all 4 weeks of the month, but those years were very difficult here financially. Okay, very interesting. Can you send someone around? First they ask one rabbi, and then they ask another. Are you alive? Okay, so I want to show you two very interesting and important sources which show clearly that a person can consult two different rabbis. No one can force you who is your rabbi, where do you learn, what do you do. This is a personal matter. We're going to see other sources later on. No two people are alike. You can come to YU today, and there's so many different choices. I saw a volume that came out with a grandson of a classmate of mine, Rabbi Dr. Alan Greenstein's, Dr. Alan Goldstein's grandson, Zvi Goldstein, who teaches at HaKotel. And in his introduction, he describes the Rebbeim and YU. No, I'll take three names or four names of four Rebbeim and YU at this very moment. Reb Heschel Shechter, Reb Mordechai Willick, Reb Michael Rosenzweig, Rabbi Jeffrey Weider. All four are totally different. You're going to have students who will swear that this one is their Rebbe. The other one will say, this one is my Rebbe. Each one chooses someone who is different, who appeals to him. Hashtia kedat ein ones. And you can understand, you can't force someone into a straitjacket. Chas v'chalila, you'll say, this is your shul, this is your rabbi, this is where you belong, this is where you give your money. Freedom of choice. Now, look into Choshen Mishpat, Perek Chafhei, and I'm quoting from a long simon of the Ramah. Let me see if I can. On the standard edition of the Choshen Mishpat, it's Lamed Dalid Amid Bet. And let me quote it to you, word by word. V'mhayaminig b'yila hakel mipnei shechacham echad horalahem kach. One individual was Mekil. This was his psak. And then Bim Chachamachev Bola saw Mashe Matirim Nahug Bo Isa. And later another rabbi came to the city, and he was the rabbi, and he already was Machmir. So you follow, you have every right to follow the second opinion. And halacha l'maisa, the first one could have been machmir, the second one mekil, the first one mekil, the second one machmir. If this is your rabbi, you can shift gears. Now, what's very important in the siman, and this basically has nothing to do with the question Rabbi Nasha Klein was asked, it just has to do with rabbis changing their mind. And here in the Ramah, Avolim Nimsa Lefamim Tshuvat Ka'on V'lo Ala Zichrono Al Seifa V'nimsu Achayim Shechokim Alav Ein Tzrichim Lipso Kidivri Hachronim She'efsha she'no yadu divrei hagon v'yichave samimim shamiyavuku hadrei b'chu. And wow, this is an unbelievable thought that affects all of our learning on the highest level today. I got any lectures on this about 30, 40 years ago. It's not for now. But the heart of it is, sure, we know a great deal. But there are always kitveyad being discovered. I go back to Why You In My Time. I remember that I may remember the person, it may have been Milton Zalewski. We were together in Rabbi Volkshir. And one of the Talmidim brought in a Meiri that had just come out. The Meiri manuscripts that some of them they got from the Vatican. And they started publishing them. And we were learning Baba Batra. I remember it was Baba Batra, and this was the Meiri on Baba Batra. I remember a big, thick volume. And Folk was quoting something. And we quoted the Meiri and showed him there's another opinion. And he got so upset with that Meiri, and I'll never forget what he said. Miam Nishke Volk. Mimniska Hata Miri and tells when Chuknishtein in the Miri yet. We didn't have a Miri and tells, and I don't look at the Miri now. And here you have that question. Kitveyad, Geniza, Rambam, variant readings, Avoda Kamelech. The Rav's uncle, Rabbi Nachum Karakovsky, asking the Rav to check manuscripts in Berlin, in the library. All the Sfarim that come out today. What do you do if there's a change? You paskin what you paskin, but you didn't have all the kitva yad, you didn't have the manuscripts, you didn't have all the svarim, you didn't have the meiri. So you see from the choshen mishpat that you can shift gears. Nothing is embedded in letters of steel and stone. You have a right to learn, continue learning. More makarat. You have a right to shift gears, to have a different understanding, a different pshat. And this goes on and on. Whenever you get a small example, you learn the Rambam. You're learning makat. You're learning about setting up batei dinim all over. Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. And then you see the reading in the Gemara. You set up batei dinim in Chutz La'aretz. Kol plach v'plach, not ear v'ear. Kol pelach v'pelach, not ear v'ear. What does it mean? In every little neighborhood you set up batei dinim, but not in cities? Doesn't make sense. Cities are more important than neighborhoods. If you're going to set up batei dinim, first you have the city, then you worry about the neighborhood. You know how many variant readings there are on that line in the Gemara? Is it pelech pelech, ear ear? Is it ear ear first, pelech pelech? You can take endless examples. Kitve Yad becomes a fine-tuned challenge. Can you shift gears? Absolutely. All right. This is the Choshen Mishpat. I'll show you another source in a minute. But I want to say as a word of caution, see, this is a very famous letter from the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was very upset with two students of his, the Yehuda family. These were two brothers who studied with the Chazon Ish in the 30s into the 40s and then went to university and broadened. One brother remained in America, wound up in Cleveland. The other brother came back to Israel, came back to Tzfat. I happened to teach two grandchildren, two daughters of these two brothers. And Friday night I actually saw his son-in-law davening at my minyan. And these brothers were very fine Talmidei Chachamim, but they already had an academic approach, and at times they felt maybe we have to shift gears because we have better manuscripts today. To a certain degree, it follows Reb Shaul Lieberman and his thinking, and these manuscripts, fine. Chazon Ish has a very important letter to them. He criticizes their attitude towards manuscripts, and he refers to this Choshen Mishpat. But it may very well be that if you find a Ktav Yad 1,000 years later, the Chazon Ish indicates Hashkacha Pratit, that the fact that it didn't play a major role in determining the halacha 1,500 years ago because it wasn't extant. So it could be, yes, you consider it, but you don't give it the same overwhelming status of a Rishon. It's from the Rishonic period, but you're discovering it hundreds of years later. It's a question that hangs fire. It's an interesting question. Can we overthrow an entire tradition because we found the Ktav Yad? And even when you find the Ktav Yad, as you will see if you go into Kitvei Yad, you'll see another Ktav Yad that is just the opposite. So, it's a fascinating question. And we have to know that there are always one simple human problem here. Kitvei Yad were written by hand. The minute you write something by hand, there are bound to be mistakes. You write a Sefer Torah, you go to mikveh, you sit b'kedusha v'tara, you write it watching every word, you reread it, it's checked today, you check it both with the human and with the computer. Sifrei Torah, you are bound to have infinitely less mistakes than anything else. But Kitvei Yad, Rambam, Rashi, right now in Bar Ilan University, Aaron Arend, I just saw over the weekend the work he just put out, the Rashi on Megillah. He works with 9 different manuscripts. He wants to do all of Shas. It'll take him 5 lifetimes. But it's crucially important to a Talmud Chacham who's learning. It's not for the masses. But you have a difficult Rashi, check out what the original text is. So you see, this is fascinating, but it shows you that rabbis can change minds, people can shift gears. There's a lot of choice involved. No one can force you. No one can say, study with this rabbi. Go to this shul. Go to this class. We're human beings. I don't want to make the analogy, but, you know, a guy starts going with a girl, and they made a shidduch, didn't appeal to him. One man's hot water bag is another man's passion. Can't set up clear rules. This girl is for you. This girl is beautiful. This girl has the personality you want. Lahavdil, or maybe not lahavdil. Love is very important. Working out a happy marriage is crucial to our existence as Jewish human beings, in my humble opinion at least. Whether we marry the girl we love or love the girl we marry, it's all right. The difference between our crowd and the Hasidic world. Hasidic world, you learn to love the girl you marry. Our crowd, we marry the girl we love. But either way, there's so much choice. Learning Torah, Rebbe, Shul, learning Psak, manuscripts. Wow. It's a fascinating topic. Halacha l'maisa, I want to tell you, no overwhelming manuscript that really upsets our way of life has been found. But for instance, Melacha Shenet Tzricha L'Gufo, Psik Reishe, all these Shelos of Shabbos, the Meiri dealing with Gentiles, we do find different opinions, and it can very well be very helpful in Psak Halacha, that these become snifim to a Psak. In contemporary times, an automatic elevator on Shabbos has been strengthened by some of the Kitvei Yad we found. The whole attitude towards Gentiles, that's the Meiri, becomes very important. How do we relate to Gentiles today? And the Meiri had a much broader understanding dealing with the reality of what the Gentiles were like later in his time. A lot has been written, doctorates of Hebrew U. It has enabled us to develop our concepts with more sources than before. But I don't know anything that we ever found that was revolutionary. But even a psak, like I just mentioned, plach, plach, ear, pelech, pelech, ear, ear. It's fascinating. Because when you learn the Gemara, it hits you in the eyes. It's not, doesn't make sense. And then when you see the Kitvei Yad, hey, At least you feel better. My mind was working. Some of the kids support me. Now, I want to show you another, and this is a very, very important source, Halacha Lemaisa. I trust you've heard it quoted, because this Shaila comes up all the time, and Rabbi Menashe Klein raises it, and my own life, students have asked me this very question. It's the Shach to Yoredeya. I'll tell you exactly where it is. It's right after Siman Resh Mem Bet. I want to, interesting here. It says on, it tells you on top Resh Mem Gimel, but that's what comes after this. This is Siman Resh Mem Bet. And it's a separate kuntus of the Shach. It's called Kitzur Bahanhagat Horaot Isur V'Cheta Ho'oleh Mikol HaShas V'Poskim. Everything that you have, Psak Halacha from all the Poskim, the Shach has a brief quintress where he tells you Halacha L'maisa, how you should act. And the first part of the quintress, there are 10 different subdivisions. The first part, Chacham she'asa v'chalach horato v'nishpata mutal lish'ol l'sheni. A Chacham gave a psak, and people are following his psak, and for whatever the reasons it bothers you, and you want to ask a second rabbi, are you allowed? All right. I like that example I gave. Imagine if you come to Gris, or come to BMT, or come to Torah Shraga, and you grew up in a neighborhood where they didn't use Stam Chalav, and I don't know, you come to Israel, and you can get Snickers and other candy bars, but it all has Stam Chalav. And you want to have that candy. You miss it. You want to have it. Can you ask a second rabbi? And the Shach says, yes, you can ask a second rabbi. Rak sheyodiu she'asa harishon. And you have to tell the second rabbi that I asked the first rabbi and he told me I'm not allowed to use it. You follow? Then the second rabbi can answer. And the second rabbi, for the sake, I'm giving an example here, the second rabbi can say, look, I know what the first rabbi said, but I differ. I have different shikul hadat. And if he says it's permissible. And you see, shikul hadat, when you get involved in shikul hadat, this involves everything we're talking about. A rabbi has to be part of the world, part of the community, has to know who you are, where you're coming from. Chassidic kid came over and asked me about Stam Chalav. I'd have to tell the kid right away, look, you're Chassidic. You're Chabad. I drink Stam Chalav. Doesn't mean you can. See the Shikul Hadar here. Chabadnikim went all over the world, came where there was nowhere. And the first thing they have to do is there's milk cows, so they have milk to drink, right or wrong. To me, I'm not going to milk cows. I'll drink regular milk. If it's government approved, then there's no chance of non-kosher milk being in it. But you see, this is shikul hadat. Kid comes over. I remember I had shilas years ago with ice cream on Pesach. So here, the ice cream at that time was all made with May legumes, with legumes derivative. Vegetable, some sort of vegetable shortening. So I remember one fellow, he told me, not asked me, but he was a banker. I remember like yesterday, I can tell you who, very successful afterwards. This is about 40 years ago. And he says, he was heavy. I can't have ice cream in Pesach. He was all upset. And he says, what's there to be chayshish for? Make kidneyot. They used it here, they used it there. And forgetting the Svad. The Svad is regular kidneyot. So I like my shikaladar. I told him, be matin neder, because in America they don't use make kidneyot. And all right. He said to me, enjoying yontev, you know, there's shikal hadat involved. Shikal hadat, a kid, his home is not kosher, he's a bal tshuva. You can't apply all the chumras that you would for a normal kid from a normal home where all these facilities or all these considerations don't play a role. That's shikal hadat. The Rav said that, I can quote the Rav here, the Rav said that in Shailas of Parat Mishpacha, he always would try to be Mekil if he could. Because the Shikal Hadad, you're dealing with America, you're dealing with an oversexed generation. And here, there's a way that on Pi Halacha, we can be Mekil. Okay, you go with it. It helps the situation. And this is Shikal Hadad. This is the Shach. This is the Choshen Mishpat. This is Psak Halacha. The whole question, human beings, people, environment, leaving out Kitvei Yad, which is a tremendous question unto itself. And this is Rebbe Nasha Klein. How can you stop someone from answering, going to a different rabbi, getting different answers, going to a different shul? Freedom of choice outweighs any financial considerations. And I can tell you, halacha lemaisa, kinat sofim taber chachma. You saw what happened in Kew Gardens Hills. Take a look today, Yeshiva University and Touro University. It's two different institutions, saving different purposes. And Touro University, as today a medical school, I think they may even have a dental school. They have a chiropractor school, I believe. Have so many different divisions that are not necessarily Jewish. But a lot of money comes in. They run a yeshiva. They run Landa College. They run a high school. Bernie Landa said to me, I quote, I take from the Goyim and give to the Jews. And they're alive and kicking. It's not Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University, okay, that's a different school. Also, high school, college, Stern College, high level, graduate schools, open to the world. Kinat Sofrim Taper Chachma. Touros all over the place. They took over Chicago. They may have elsewhere. I remember one time they were in Moscow. They're in Israel. It's unbelievable. But these are two institutions. Kinat Sofrim Taber Chachma. You see the advertisements, open up Jewish action. Why use advertising? Tourist advertising. Hashtiyah Kedat, Eino Neis. Every individual. This is Rav Menashe Klein. Then he says something else. I'll end off with this. And this is also very powerful. The rabbi says, the people, don't want them to go to the other rabbi, don't want to support the other shul. It's worried about the Hasagat Gvul. And he quotes a beautiful Gemara. Gemara in Brachot, Daf Lamed Dalet Amid Bet. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Hanavim Kulon, Lo Nit Nabu, Ela Masi Bitol Talmud Chacham, Ula Oseh Pragmatya Talmud Chacham, Ula Mahane Talmud Chacham Mina Chasav, Avol Talmud Chacham Atzmo, Ayin Lo Rata Elohim Zulat Chayaseh Lemachakeh Lo. And the Gemara says, wait, I don't want to tell you where that last pasuk is from. Hey, yeah. Shishayohu perik nun zayin pasuk yutet umeyolom lo shamu lechezinu ayin lo dat elohim zulatcha ya'asel mechakelo. And here, to help a Talmud Chacham, most important feature of our life. Kol HaNeviim lo nitbu'u. And how do you help a Talmud Chacham? May she be told a Talmud Chacham. That's also the Gemara in Pesachim. What does it mean, may she be told a Talmud Chacham? I think it refers to a two-way advantage. One, if you're well off, you marry a daughter of a Talmud Chacham, you help financially. You supply the dowry. I think there's a second advantage, that a daughter of a Talmud Chacham is different than most girls. Their values are proper. And I say about the state of Israel, the girls raised here, magnificent values. I see my granddaughters-in-law, magnificent values. Compare them to the girls raised in the five towns, in Teaneck, in Beverly Hills, elsewhere. Fabulous values. May she be told the Talmud Chacham. I think it's a two-way street. A dual advantage. And it means a business advantage to a Talmud Chacham. And here I take you to the story of Mr. Gris and the Rav. Joe Gris said to the Rav, again, I can't go into all the details now, but it's a magnificent story how Joe Gris came to his brother Askar, who was Frum and a Talmud of the Rav, and told him I have problems. And Askar said, I'll bring you to my Rebbe. Maybe he can help you. And the Rav brought him to his wife, Rebbe Tzimtanya, and she helped Mr. Gris with his problems. And that's how I'm sitting here. When the Rebbetzin was ill, I mean, it's beyond words, Daschach HaPratet, I shiver, I shake. How I got this building from Mr. Gris. Read what I told him, but I reminded him. I said, Mr. Gris, you said to the Rebbetzin, what can I do? Was kann ich tun für euch? They spoke Yiddish to each other. And the Rebbetzin said, the Rosh Yeshiva in YU are underpaid. And on the spot, Mr. Gris said, I'm giving the first $1 million. Today I have a $1 billion donation to Herbert Einstein. But that was, you know about that. You don't know what's going on in Alaska. The news didn't reach you. Gottesman from the library, his widow, gave $1 billion, no more tuition. Rabaron Soloveitchik has a granddaughter in Einstein. She's finished 2 years. She paid tuition. No more tuition for the next 2 years. It's unbelievable. But anyway, coming back here, Joe Gris gave $1 million. My salary was doubled overnight. That's how I came to visit Israel for the first time and vowed I would settle here within the year. And Mr. Grish said to the Rav, Rebbe, I want to help you financially. Do you have $25,000 that if you lose, you won't miss? And the Rav gave him $25,000. This is the story I heard from very reliable sources. And Mr. Grist put it into his own personal portfolio. He was like Warren Buffett, a genius. And that $25,000 turned into a lot more money. That's helping a Talmud Chacham. Kenny, you have a big store, you sell electronic appliances, computers. A Talmud Chacham walks in, you say, whatever you want to buy, 15% off, my great honor to help a Talmud Chacham. You follow me? That's the Gemara. Osef rak machel the Talmud Chacham. Nene mi Talmud Chacham l'nechasev. I have students that have given me great gifts. I have to be thankful. I have to be thankful. I am thankful, 100%. So Reb Menashe Klein gets hysterical. People want to start individuals from going from one shul from another. People want to stop them from giving money and supporting. Mize sheyachol le'asal adam la'asot la'atzmot tovot ke'elu al yedei shemahanel le'talmid chacham. And just the opposite. Vadayim mahanecha be'talmidei chacham mitzvatan kfula u'mechupelet. There's no end to this reward for a Talmud Chacham. The more for the reward of the person who supports, the more you support, the better. And you saw that in Kew Gardens Hills. Fabian Schoenfer was so smart. You know, a balabas, you have a little money, you give here, you give there, give a third. The more you have, the better. My best yeshivot, ma ber chachma, chinat sofrim tam ber chachma. This is the way life works. And he paskins la halacha, chas v'chalila yushirim tefiah. And then he says, and this is the way he ends off the tshuva, if there's a machloikis in the community, which obviously there was here, then they have an obligation. Talmidei Chachamim, Maber Shalom B'Olam. Say it in davening every day in Israel, you know, say it not in America. Say it after Pitum HaKtoret. Talmidei Chacham, Lo Kol Shekein. Have to go out of their way to make peace. And he encourages the community in Cleveland. It could be David Neumann knows the details. Encourages the community in Cleveland. Make peace. Work it out. Let there be harmony. Kinat sofrim taber chachma. And these were the two questions he got. The diabetic mother, pregnant, the girl, not yet bar mitzvah, bringing in goyim, Kew Garden Hills. I never forget that sign. You know, at the time I thought I'd be back every year in Kew Garden Hills. I should have taken a picture. Maybe someone is listening and who knows what I'm talking about. And now B'nai Brak, an official location with rules and regulations. All right, it's a sideshow. Do we want to stay to Israel with Goyim, without Goyim? The truth is, as long, in my humble opinion, as long as they get Rim B'Sharecha, you can employ them as Shabbos Goyim. You don't have to be negative. One of my grandsons works for O19. O19 is one of the carriers of internet and phone, etc., TV, and they have to be available 7/24 in order to get a license. So they have they began in Nachalim. It's a fallout from Nachalim, these Wall Street people. And they have their own building near Ariel. No Jews are allowed in after 3 o'clock Friday. Druze take over the whole operation till Sunday morning. All right. We're living here. We have to provide employment for the non-Jews. I see nothing wrong with it. On the other hand, I have to say I can understand the kibbutzim who didn't want to be dependent upon Gentiles to milk cows on Shabbos. Has to be a way that we can live our pi Torah and have the ability without Gentiles. And that problem we've solved. There was a world written on it going back 100 years ago already, including the Chaim Meiser and others. That problem we've solved. I can tell you it's an interesting question. I was in the last place I ever toured in my life. My children took Malt and myself to Venice. Venice was very fascinating. It was right before Corona. And there's Jews who lived there who were Shomer Shabbos Jews. Not learned, but Shomer Shabbos. So there was a lady who gave me a whole argument when I mentioned we have an automatic elevator in our building. She felt, no, it's not right to have it. You have to walk on Shabbos, not use an elevator. Didn't argue with her. But believe me, I use that elevator Shabbos. Saves my life. I live on the top floor. And at my age, with my feet, Baruch Hashem. So there's a lot to be said. Like every other thing, whatever Rav Menashe Klein touches upon, you can move sideways and discuss it endlessly. The whole question of a minor doing work, what's the halacha? But you see, Me'ika Hadin, it's that you can't have them do work for you. But what about if the minor wants to do work? Do you stop him? See, chinuch plays a role here. Common sense. You can't expect the kid to become 12 or 13 and suddenly stop everything. And you look in Yom Kippur, what age to start fasting, etc. Same thing, Shabbat. You have to raise a kid gradually. And I know my wife, my wonderful daughters, when they were little kids, my wife had them light little candles next to her. And you know, I was stupid. I didn't understand. To me, but I looked. I just watched. To me, but why does a girl have to light candles? I mean, not Chabad. And it's, I don't want to go. But the Rebbe instituted was genius. He gave girls a mitzvah. That's their mitzvah. But that lighting little candles. Today, I have great granddaughters lighting little candles. Understand it's seichel here. But I halacha lemaisa. The girl could take the blood if there's no other solution, and chas v'chalila ta'asa people from going one rabbi to another, hashtia kedat ein ones. Yoma, is the kollel here today? How is it? It's amazing. I just more listening and more following and more emails and way beyond the heads of the poor guys in the kollel that have to pass the exams in Yoredeya. What are they learning, Yoredeya this year? You don't know? And
both.
Some learning Lida, some learning Yoredeya. And what are they learning? Which Masechet?
Brachas, Ketzav
Mevarchim. Brachat, wow.
Ketzav
Mevarchim. Okay, everything, that's the basics. They have to do well. All right. Any questions from the erudite gentleman in front of me? I just want to mention April 8th will be the last class before Pesach. It's Erev, the day before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That class will be devoted entirely to Winds of Promise, the new book, Rabbi and Leah, Moshe and Leah Horowitz. Ellie, my dear student, Dina Horowitz, Hashem Yikom Damo. Kenny, ask around if there are any BMT boys who would be interested in coming. See if there's any response. Do you know how to reach Yehuda Singer? You know.
He's in Mitzvah Yerichon,
though. He lives in Mitzvah Yerichon. If you reach him, tell him about it. 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock, regular class. They can come with their wives, whatever they want. Yoshua Grinstein, tell your mother. Your mother may be interested in coming. The widow of Harry Grinstein, etc. And I'll tell you why I want your advice. Geffen wanted to send someone here to me. The books are available, book launch at a discount. I'm worried there won't be a crowd here. So I don't want to embarrass someone who'll come to sell. He'll sell 5 books. If there's, so they gave me sheets people can order, but you have to pay postage, etc. It's much easier to buy it here and have it in your hands. If there is response, tell me. I'll tell Geffen to send someone to collect the books, to distribute the books, to sell the books. You follow? See what the response is and think if there's any way we could reach the masses. It's impossible. We don't have list or a culture that doesn't exist, but see what we can do. Okay, I want to thank you and we meet again in health and happiness. Will you be here from Alaska for tomorrow? And when do you go back to Alaska?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So, all right, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll have the pleasure of being together tomorrow and next week. Now, I just want to tell Ephraim, the book by Rabbi Steinman is very fascinating. He represents what YU went through in the 40s, the 50s, the 30s, 40s, 50s. He's a white yeshiva college graduate. He has basic learning, and it's a doctorate done on Brandeis, and it's not bad, not a bad doctorate at all. Nothing in there that we could object to is Torah Jews. It's a nice review of the Maharik, and what we quoted today from the Ramah was basically the Ramah quoting the Maharik. So that's in relation to that book. Yitzchak, how do you feel? I didn't see you. It's good to see you. Chazak v'yematz. Open it up if there are any questions. It's open? Yomo?
Yes, it's already open.
It's open. Okay. I apologize to everyone what happened here this morning. I have no control over. I pray and hope, but I hope it's not a tefillat shove, that they'll have everything ready tomorrow. Yomo, check later today if everything is set, if and what's happening with the printing. People send me things to look at. I can't print. And I want to say to Nachum, regards from your parents. I spoke with your mother on Friday, Baruch Hashem. It was right before Shabbos here, but it was the morning there. And thank God she sounded good. And Ira, there's a death in your family. Am I correct? Leora, please send my sincere condolences. One of the brightest young ladies I ever taught. I don't know if you know, she was called the Junior Golda Meir with her great success at the Bible contest, the noble Reich family. Unfortunately, we're all a little bit older, and with old age comes shifting gears. I wish the world would last forever and all of us could be together indefinitely, but that's not the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world, and Kohelet lets us know what the score is. So please extend heartfelt condolences. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya.